You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Hardcore supplements backed by science.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply,
it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We've got a great show for you today. This is becoming the never-ending subject that we're going to be discussing today. In just a moment, I'm going to have my good friend Dr. Mauro DiPasquale on, and we're going to further investigate the concept of eliminating carbohydrates from post-workout nutrition, which is apparently counterintuitive to most people, because of all the propaganda out there that's been promoted by carbohydrate supplementing type companies out there. And so we're gonna carry on that discussion in just a moment. But before we start that, I want to mention something. If you've purchased product from uswellnessmeats.com, I don't care if you've made one purchase or you've become one of their monthly reorder subscribers or whatever, I would really appreciate it. You'd be doing me a huge favor if you could please email me at onair@superhumanradio.com and tell me about your experience. You know, I know the product is fantastic, and I'm trying to do a little evaluation on behalf of U.S. Wellness Meats about the response from my audience. So if you could please take a moment, it could be one sentence. Here's what I ordered, love it, hate it, whatever. If you could please email me at onair@superhumanradio.com and let me know what your experience has been with the product from U.S. Wellness Meats, I would really appreciate it. And now, with further ado, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. How you doing, Mauro?
I'm just fine, Carl.
You know, Mauro, every now and then I hit a subject that really motivates and mobilizes the opinions of people all over the world to discuss the things that we talk about on the show. And you happen to be the person who has done this now. We first started to investigate the idea between eliminating carbohydrate from post-workout nutrition a year ago. And when I re-aired that show, there was a reinvestment of interest in that. And of course, there are people who line up on both sides of this discussion. There's people who say, nonsense, carbohydrates are critical. There are people who say, I have not been using carbohydrates, and I'm growing, I feel good, I'm seeing the results. Well, you and I did a follow-up show, and boy, if that didn't just spark a whole group of other discussions. Lo and behold, you emailed me the other day, and I'll let you go ahead and kind of take it from here. What did you email me the other day?
Well, actually, you know, there are a lot of papers that have shown that carbs have an effect on insulin sensitivity one way or the other. Now, you know, the question here, of course, is carbs post-training. Now, the paper that I emailed you was one that's in press. That means it really hasn't been published officially yet, but the paper will be published soon. And it basically said that, post-training carbs decrease insulin sensitivity. That's the bottom line. This was done for several hours after training. They also looked at energy deficit and its effect on fat metabolism.
Which I really want to talk about, too, because I'm a big proponent of that aspect of training when you're looking to get leaner, and we'll discuss that in just a moment.
Right.
That, now, many, many people on the Internet thought the analogy you used for using carbohydrates post-workout, you compared it to premature ejaculation, and many, many people both chuckled and implied they understood that analogy was accurate, that using carbohydrates post-workout actually will blunt the effect that you're looking for post-workout, which is muscular growth.
Yes, that's right. You know, I mean, I hate to use something like premature ejaculation because as a doctor, I've seen patients who had that problem, and it's not really all that funny, but
right,
it does bring out the point. And if you want it over really quickly, and maybe too quickly, prematurely, then yeah, you know, use carbs right after training, load right up.
Right.
You know, the whole concept of carbs post-training was really not related to muscle hypertrophy or to the effects of insulin on amino acid transport, protein synthesis, fatty acid metabolism, et cetera. What it was done for was glucose.
Okay? I was going to say,
endurance athletes. They want a huge glycemic response. They want to be able to form glycogen as quickly and as fast as possible and super compensate the glycogen because they think that glycogen is the answer to endurance. In other words, the more glycogen they have, the better they'll perform in endurance events. And this whole aspect of research has been centered around that for decades.
And the reality is, if you are looking for maximum glycogen uptake, then perhaps I shouldn't say that. Let me back up. I think if you're looking for maximum glycogen uptake in a small period of time, then the best thing to do is to totally blow out and load up on carbs immediately after training. But the truth of the matter is that you'll have the same amount of glycogen uptake over a longer period of time through gluconeogenesis in the liver, and you'll end up topping off the muscles anyway, but just over a longer period of time, and you'd stay in that anabolic zone longer as well by eliminating carbohydrates from the post-workout meal. Would you say that's a true statement?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a true statement. I mean, my phase shift diets were basically based around maximizing the use of fatty acids for energy and also the ability to use the glycolytic pathway to form from glucose, you know, down into the lactic acid, which would be, you know, sort of the anaerobic threshold event, but down into the Krebs cycle, you know, to use it for energy. Now, you know, the whole response is extremely complex, Carl. You know, I mean, I'm glad that it stimulated some controversy and discussion, because we really haven't, you know, we really don't know the bottom line to all this. These are my theories. These are my feelings about what's happening. It's backed up with a lot of physiology, a lot of
science,
et cetera, you know. So, you know, it's a good thing. Rather than everybody accept the fact that, you know, post-exercise carbs is the thing to do, then we have to, you know, relook at the whole thing.
What I found interesting about this study was that, and it makes perfect sense, that by eliminating carbohydrates post-workout was versus low energy, which was fewer calories, correct?
Right.
The low energy group got fewer calories than what they really needed to replenish. And the carbohydrate group got no carbohydrates post-workout. There's just proteins and fats.
Right.
And the no carbohydrate group was the only one that saw an increase in insulin sensitivity. And that increase in insulin sensitivity actually lasted into the next day.
Yes, it did. Yeah, and that's what I was saying before. You can actually prolong the insulin sensitivity for 24, 48 hours even.
Now, that is something. On one of the boards, there was a gentleman who owns a supplement company, and he weighed in and he said nonsense. He said post-workout nutrition with carbohydrates is not going to influence insulin sensitivity over long haul. Only constantly eating lots of high glycemic carbohydrates over a very long period of time could have that. That one meal is not going to, but this study shows that the exact opposite is true, that one meal kind of set the stage for the next 24 hours.
You know, I hate to criticize other people, and I'm sure they have their reasons for what they say, and I have my reasons for what I say, and I think my reasons are backed up more by the research than what the other chap is saying. You know, I'd like to have a discussion with him and just show where he's coming from or find out where he's coming from, but I don't believe that loading up on lots of carbs, high glycemic carbs, is going to do you any good at all post-exercise unless you're an endurance runner. And I have my questions about that as well, because I'm working on some theories as to why even ultra-marathon athletes should not be using carbs post-exercise.
Really?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I mentioned that study, I think the last time.
On the last show, yes, you did.
Yeah,
you did.
The fact that if you start off exercising with lower glycogen levels, you actually have more of a training response and more of a hypertrophic response.
You know, I guess all of this plays to the concept that that the body is like a battery, and if you don't have enough juice or stored glycogen prior to the session of exercise, you're going to run out of juice during the exercise. But the body is not a battery. The body's more like an alternator in that it can store and generate energy as needed. We know that we can make glycogen on demand.
No, that's very true. Yeah.
So,
I mean, you see, part of this problem, I think, is the fact that it depends. Have you ever heard of the concept of deliberate practice?
No.
Okay. Basically speaking, let me just say a few things first. The old view of genetics was that you were born with a certain number of genes which predisposed you to being who you are.
Right.
Okay. In other words, if it wasn't in your genetics, you couldn't be a super athlete. If you weren't, it wasn't in genetics, you wouldn't be 6'8", etc. Now, there's been an opposing, I mean, this is the old nature versus nurture. There's been an opposing view where they say deliberate practice. This is something expounded by Erickson a couple of decades ago and has been followed up in several articles and books, that you can change your genetic input so that the difference is that you'll be a different kind of athlete or a different kind of person, a different kind of, have different abilities. So that with deliberate practice, you can make yourself so that you can utilize carbohydrates more efficiently. This is dietary practice, or you can train more efficiently. You can become, the thesis is that you can become whoever you want to become just by practicing long enough and hard enough and making it the kind of practice that will increase your performance or your hypertrophy or your muscle, you know, body composition, et cetera. Now, the whole concept here is that if you go into a diet phase where you become fat adapted, then you're going to be utilizing the foods, you're going to be utilizing the hormones, you're going to be utilizing the environment and your genetic input a lot differently than if you go on a high-carb diet for long periods of time. So people have to understand this is very complex processes here. It's not simplistic enough to say that he's totally wrong or he's totally wrong. So I'm just trying to bring out the fact that, yeah, the discussion is great, and we need to know more about everything that happened. But for now, from what I do know, my theories seem to stand up.
Okay. All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion. We're talking today with Dr. Mauro Di Pasquale, yet again, about post-workout carbohydrates. This is really a hot subject right now. Lots of discussion on the forums about this, and we're going to delve deeper into it in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
You've tried countless products that promise digestive relief, but you still suffer from bloating. Do you avoid foods that give you a distended stomach and abdominal discomfort? Want something that actually works? You need Otrantil. Otrantil is the first in its class to naturally target the root cause of bloating and finally deliver real relief. Developed by a gastroenterologist, Otrantil is the only proven over-the-counter solution for bloating. Learn more at lovemytummy.com. Otrantil is backed by a 100% money-back guarantee. Visit lovemytummy.com today. Use code SHR for 10% off.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
If you've followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then trained, fasted, and remained fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing. So our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today.
U.S. Wellness Meats is the leader in home-delivered, high-quality
quality animal protein. Grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, and dairy. Plus, wild-caught seafood, heritage pork, and free-range poultry. Everything delivered right to your door within days of your order. There is no one better to supply you and your family with the highest quality pastured meat product and dairy than U.S. Wellness Meats. Save 15% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the U.S. Wellness Meats banner ad today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. We're furthering the discussion on post-workout nutrition as it relates to carbohydrate consumption. You know, from what I'm looking at research-wise, it looks to me like if you want to see an increase in insulin sensitivity, which obviously means the same thing as a high insulin level, to maybe more, because high insulin levels may actually cause a diminishing response to the effects of insulin. But if insulin sensitivity is important to you because of the benefits, it looks like post-workout carbohydrates are not in the recipe.
Well, you know, I mean, it's important to realize that insulin does a number of things. A lot of the research on insulin, obviously, is related to diabetics, and a lot of the medical research focuses on that for the last 100 years. Insulin, of course, does increase the amount of glucose you can get into the cell, increases the glycogen buildup. In other words, makes the whole, and also decreases fat breakdown, increases fat buildup. It increases amino acids into the cell, increases protein synthesis, decreases protein degradation. So you've got a variety of things that insulin can do. But if you satisfy the glucose part, in other words, the carbohydrate part, where insulin then fills up the cell, fills it up with the glycogen, then at that point, the other effects of insulin also decrease. So You're decreasing the amino acids going into the cell. You're
right, and that's what you really, and that's really the important stuff. You know, that's the interesting thing. Those of us who are interested in resistance training, we're really interested in the protein synthetic response from the stimulus of training. We struggle so hard to make sure that we're in positive nitrogen and blah blah blah, because it's the protein synthesis we're looking for as a result of the amino acid pool that's available and the muscles wanting to build more muscle fiber.
Yeah, but here's a kicker, Carl, that we haven't even discussed. Insulin insensitivity, or a decrease in insulin sensitivity in fat, is not a bad thing.
In fat. Because that means it won't shuttle more fat. Right.
Exactly. Okay. You won't make more fat. Now, here's the kicker in all this. Post-exercise carbs, if you limit the post-exercise carbs, you actually will increase the insulin sensitivity to some extent in fat. The insulin insensitivity. In other words, the fat becomes more insulin insensitive, whereas in muscle fibers, there's an increase in insulin sensitivity.
So there's a reciprocal relationship. In other words, and actually, it's
exactly.
it's an intelligently designed reciprocal relationship, because the idea
Definitely.
Is that you want to rid yourself of fat, you want to build muscle. So it seems to me that the ideal thing to do would be to eliminate post-workout carbohydrates.
It is, and here's the other thing: you use the energy that comes from breaking down and oxidizing the fat in your body to build muscle. Because building muscle, amino acid synthesis, protein synthesis, et cetera, requires energy. So what better way than to use the energy in your body to, in your body fat, break it down to increase protein. In other words, what you're doing is you're maximizing body composition here, decreasing body fat and increasing lean body mass.
Now, we're going to go into the next subject that was covered in this study that was elucidated, I should say. But before we go there, I want to ask you a question. Since you've been doing this phase shift diet and you've been an advocate for the high protein, high fat diet for quite a long time now, 30 years at least, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long does it take for the body to shift its desire in substrate? And how long does it take for the body to go, this is the substrate utilization I prefer as opposed to that?
Okay, well, you know, there isn't a 100% clear answer on this. Studies done about 5 or 6 years ago in Australia showed that after 5 days, you actually started using fat more efficiently and were actually mostly fat adapted. I don't believe that's true. Personally, I think it takes, after 5 days, you do see some of the effects. You see some of the effects almost immediately because the body has to cope with whatever you give it. I mean,
it's got to stay alive.
It copes very quickly. Yeah, it copes very quickly.
Right.
People don't realize that even genetic changes take place in split seconds. Okay?
Mm.
But going back to the hypothesis here, I believe that it probably takes a good month before you're really solidly fat adapted so that you're utilizing fat as your primary fuel in exercise. Okay, the amount of fat you use will increase the lactate threshold or the anaerobic threshold, which usually increases or you reach it faster as you get to higher intensity of training, makes it so that you don't produce as much lactic acid, so that you're not as affected by the buildup in your performance is, you can train longer, you can train harder, and this adds to the ability to increase muscle mass as well. So, you know, for that to happen efficiently, I think it's at least a month.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, you know, it seems to take at least 2 weeks for anything to affect the body. But anyway, are there any supplements that can help promote this? I know, I want to say acetyl-carnitine causes the cells or the mitochondria to better or more efficiently use triglycerol. Is that correct?
Well, what happens is the L-carnitine actually acts as a shuttle for fatty acid to go into the mitochondria, which is basically the furnace which produces energy in the muscle cells, allows this to occur more easily because it actually transports the fatty acids into the mitochondria to be used up. So if you have an increase in L-carnitine, then the process is more efficient.
Hmm.
Now, on the other hand, if you have a decrease, it's less efficient. So it's a very complex mechanism. When you have an excess in glucose utilization in the use of carbs, you form certain products that come out into the cytoplasm of the cell, and these products inhibit the action of L-carnitine. So what happens is the fatty acids are not shuttled into burning, they're shuttled into forming fat.
So in other words, L-carnitine will only work if you are almost fat adapted, in other words. You have to be off the carbs, so to speak.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is true. You have to be fat adapted. But L-carnitine works in any condition. For example, if someone's doing some aerobics, the L-carnitine will increase its efficiency. There's something called malonyl-CoA, but you know, we don't want to go to that because it's very complex. And, you know, there's a lot of factors involved into why L-carnitine can shuttle more fatty acids and why sometimes it shuttles less and forms fat. So basically, low-carb approach, being fat-adapted, allows that process to occur easier. It allows you to use up your own body fat and, produce more energy from fat.
Interesting. And isn't growth hormone another one of those agents that also causes the does growth hormone cause a substrate utilization change, or does it make the cells, the mitochondria, more effective at using triglycerols as energy?
Yeah, I mean, it does both. It actually increases fat metabolism and has an anabolic effect on protein synthesis as well. So growth hormone definitely is a factor here. This is why I usually suggest people to take some sort of growth hormone enhancing compound after training, along with a plentiful supply of amino acids, protein, keep the carbs low, and this usually gives them a maximum response.
So the other thing that was discovered in this study, which is something that I've talked about in the past when using periodic fasting, overnight fasting, a 12-hour fast before doing exercise, is that in the low-energy group, the group that was on a hypocaloric protocol, that they utilize fat better as a source of energy and subsequently burn more fat or oxidize more fat, correct?
Well, they had to, didn't they?
Yeah, they had
they had to use body fat because you weren't giving it anything to work on. The body is very adaptive. It's going to use whatever you give it. It's going to train itself to whatever conditions that you supply for it. And this is what I was talking about before about deliberate training. I mean, if you do things in a certain deliberate way, you will get certain results.
Yeah, you know what? That was discovered not just in an exercise physiology type of a context, but
geniuses, et cetera, yeah.
Well, I mean, but I mean, when they looked, when you look at the Human Genome Project, the most astounding thing that came out of that project was that you can influence your genetics. It's not scripture. It's not like this is your genetics and that's it. The environment and what you do with your genetics had more to do than your genetic predisposition.
Definitely. And there's even studies that show, for example, that you can change the traits to the point where you can give it to your offspring. In other words, you can actually change part of your genetic input and make it slightly different so that your children will be slightly genetically different than they would be if you hadn't made these changes. And I mean, it's a very complex, you know, the fact that you can silence certain cells, you can activate certain cells, the whole process, even along the ways it does it, the way the body can change these things, is becoming more evident now, especially with the human genome and the various kinds of DNA testing that's being done. It's amazing the flexibility now in thinking about the processes that we now have, that we can think that if we make changes to the environment, then we can affect what we become, much more so than what we thought before.
And isn't that evolution? When you really think about it, I mean, we've changed so dramatically over the past 1,000 years as a species, and that's because our genetics keep changing in response to the stimuli, which is our environment. The food we eat, the world we live in, changes us. It changes, and we change during our maturation process. We change, and then we give that new encoding to our offspring, and they slightly change right from the get-go, and then they continue to change. Isn't that just the evolutionary process?
Yeah, it's becoming elucidated much more now with you know, our tools are getting better. You know, with the genome, our tools improve dramatically, and we can now test different things and different theories, and it'll get much more complex as time goes on. The interesting thing is that, you know, everybody has basically the same genetic structure. I mean, there are differences in polymorphisms, that, you know, little tiny changes in parts of the genes and in the genes in everybody, but these are minor compared to the overall DNA makeup of each person. Now, the differences occur, and this was found out more with twin studies. You know, twins have identical genetic input, but the farther apart they grow, the older they get, and the different environments, they become different people. So if this was totally genetics, how do you explain all these huge differences? I mean, differences in cancers, for example. One twin will won't have a cancer. The other one will develop pancreatic cancer at age 40.
Yeah. No, okay? I know.
And it's environmental. Now,
I know two twins. You know, I know two twins, and they both were diagnosed with macular degeneration, but one went blind and one did not. So there's evidence of what you're saying right there.
I mean, it's fascinating anyways. But a lot of people, I mean, there are two totally opposite views on this. One view is that you are what your genes are. You're never going to be able to transcend your genes. Your genes are given to you at birth, and that's what you're stuck with. The other view is that you can change anything.
Right.
You know, you can silence some genes so they don't work. You can activate others. If you want to be, for example, a sprinter, the only thing that's keeping you back is training your body, providing the right environment, that you will be a super sprinter. You might not be the best sprinter in the world, but you will be a super sprinter.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with that. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll pick up and further this discussion. We have some other stuff we're going to be talking about in just a moment, also about muscle hypoxia. We're talking today with Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. We'll be right back.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with BodybuildingSupplements.com. BodybuildingSupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Cree Alkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
My Adaptogen N at BodybuildingSupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. BodybuildingSupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at BodybuildingSupplements.com.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the DaVinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless. And the DaVinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the DaVinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenadrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenadrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenadrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Quest Keto is making the ketogenic lifestyle more delicious and more convenient than ever. The high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb keto diet has earned a reputation for being complicated. Quest Keto has changed all of that by offering sweet and savory snacks and an entire line of ready-to-go ketogenic meals. They've taken the guesswork out of it for you. From keto cinnamon rolls, pizza, crackers, and more, you can enjoy it all and experience the benefits of this nutritious approach anytime, anywhere. Thanks to Quest Keto. Go to QuestKeto.com to order your meals today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale, a true sports medicine expert and a sportsman, too. So, Mauro, there was something else that we were talking about earlier today. And I've done a couple shows on vascular occlusion and the effects of hypertrophy, especially from the response in intramuscular hormone levels. And I know that you were talking to me about muscle hypoxia,
right?
And its effects. Let's go ahead and discuss that. So explain what muscle hypoxia is, first of all, for those people who are not
I think everybody's heard of the old endurance athletes saying they live high and train low. When you live high in the upper atmospheres, you know, let's say 3,000 to 5,000 feet up, there's less oxygen in the air. So basically you have to strive a little harder to get enough oxygen in your system. So this is hypoxia. You're decreasing the amount of available oxygen to your body. That's
okay.
It.
Okay.
You know, so there's various ways of attaining that, of course. I mean, you can go up and live in the Andes. Or you can limit, you can go into a hypoxic tent where they decrease the amount of oxygen. You can go into a hypoxic house, which some endurance athletes do. They sleep and eat and everything under low oxygen conditions.
Right.
Now the absolute the end of that, the ultimate would be apnea. In other words, you basically hold your breath until you turn blue. And that's extreme hypoxia.
Do you have to turn blue in order to see this effect? I mean, is
no.
It's just a marginal drop in the concentration of oxygen, correct?
That's true. You know, I'm trying to remember what they call this. I mean, some of this originated in Japan, and there was a name, and it was like a science fiction movie name, like Klatsu or Katsu. Or
no, that's
like
it. It's Katsu. It's Katsu.
Katsu. That's it.
It is. It's Katsu, right.
It reminded me of that big robot in War of the Worlds or something, where, you know, Klatsu come out and take care of the problem. Anyways, basically speaking, what they do, let's say you're training your arm. You would put a blood pressure cuff or a band or something on the upper part of the arm, let's say between the biceps and the deltoid.
Right.
And then you would train that arm just like you would ordinarily. Now, what's happening here, of course, is you're actually getting blood back up. You're decreasing the blood going to the area, so it's a hypoxic response. There's less oxygen available.
Right.
Now, this results, and there's been a number of studies on this, on increased muscle hypertrophy.
Right.
And you can actually simulate the doing intense exercise with light exercise. In other words, if you use this band in your upper arm and you're doing curls with, let's say you can curl 100 pounds, and you're doing curls with 30 pounds, and you do a number of them, you'll get the same response than if you bust the gut and do it with 100 pounds.
In fact, one of the earliest studies that I talked about on this show well over 2 years ago was one that looked at a vascular occlusion. There's two different distinctions here. There's vascular occlusion, there's vascular restriction. Occlusion means a greater degree of blood flow has been cut off and more blood is being trapped in the muscle. And this actually can become dangerous because there's a point of diminishing returns here, because if the blood really stops completely, then you can have an embolism if you're not careful.
Oh, I mean, it's actually extremely dangerous, even hypoxic. Now, I know of some athletes, now this is, don't anybody try this. I know of some athletes that, for example, try whole body hypoxia. Let's say they're squatting or benching. They will hold their breath as much as they can as they do the lift. And when you're squatting, for example, you can actually pass out. I mean, how dangerous is that?
Right.
But you know, these people say that they're getting better results by doing this hypoxia and even apnea, where they hold their breath for long, long periods of time. Matter of fact, interesting enough, there's ways of training for this. And one of the ways is to stick your face in water and see how long you can hold it in there.
Right.
Another way, which is interesting, and I'm not saying people to try this. I'm just saying what people are trying to do to see if they can increase muscle hypertrophy, body composition, performance, etc., is they will take deep breath, hold the breath, grab a weight as much as they can, and walk and measure themselves on how far they walk before they practically almost pass out.
Yeah, and that you know what? And these are very dangerous tactics.
These are
very extreme tactics, because you're really taxing the heart at that point in time.
Oh, definitely. Not only that, but you can run into all kinds of cardiovascular problems.
I was just going to say, you could develop
a
pulmonary embolism, a blood clot in the lung, and that can be a devastating thing. The interesting thing about Katsu is they actually have a machine in Japan, the Katsu machine.
It employs
blood pressure type cuffs that read out in milligrams of mercury, and they usually bring it up to about 180 milligrams of mercury when they are trying to cause a vascular restriction in the leg. And some of the early studies were actually done to see if this approach could be used in rehabilitation to keep muscles from
atrophying.
And what they found out was, not only did it keep them from atrophying, but the muscles actually grew under these conditions. And when they looked at it, they realized that it wasn't, a lot of people surmised that it was because of this super pump, if you will, that you're getting in the muscle, that there's a stretching of the fascia. And they thought, well, that's what it was. It's because you're stretching the muscle to such a degree. But actually, later studies, when they started biopsying muscles, they saw an increase in IGF-1 and MGF as a result of this congestion of the muscle.
Now, I don't know if many people know what MGF is, mechanical growth factor. It's an isoform of IGF-1, which is present in muscle tissue.
Right.
And acts similar to IGF-1, but it's not a systemic level. It's not found in the blood, for example. It's just in the tissue. But it acts the same as IGF-1. It increases the anabolic response.
And we know that as you just pointed out, even though IGF-1 is systemic, you can find it floating around in the blood, it becomes super concentrated in the worked muscles, as does MGF to the response, to the stimuli, to exercise. And what they found out was when you used a cuff of some sort and you restricted some of the blood flow and you got that super congested feeling, that pump that we talk about,
right,
that there was an increased protein synthetic response as a result of that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is very interesting. I mean, the whole apnea response, too, where, you know, you have these, you heard of the breath hold human divers?
Yes, yes.
Basically, what they do is they try and go as deep and as long as they can, taking one breath.
Right.
Take a breath, go down, and some of them are amazing, the amount of time that they can spend down there. But this actually changes the dynamics in the body. It allows them to extract more oxygen from the blood, for example. So these people can train longer. For example, if you were to use some of these techniques and you were to able to the difference between the blood going in the muscle, the arterial blood, and the blood coming out of muscle, the difference in the oxygen would be much greater if you were trained in this hypoxic apneic response. In other words, you'd be able to extract more oxygen. By extracting more oxygen, you can actually use fat more efficiently.
Mm.
Because fat needs oxygen to go through the Krebs cycle, which produces large amounts of ATP, of energy.
Right.
Whereas with glycogen, with glucose, you have to, once you reach a certain oxygen threshold, it turns into lactic acid, which only produces a small amount of energy, but also produces a certain amount of lactic acidosis, which causes fatigue.
Right.
So you can't train as hard.
Right.
So the whole thing is fascinating. The whole field needs to be explored further, of course, and I'll be covering this in an upcoming newsletter in detail. Interesting thing is that the newsletter is late, by the way, because I've been involved as an expert witness in some doping cases and some high-level athletes. But
have you are you done with that yet, or are you still involved?
No, I'm still involved. We have a hearing, I think, on Friday, so you know I'm trying to get ready for that.
Okay.
But the point is that this is, you know, this, it's so fascinating, and there's so many studies to go through. And, you know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, unfortunately. When I present something, an article or whatever, I like it to be well covered, I like it to be well documented, I like it to be evidence based, and I like to give conclusions that are beyond what's in the literature.
Right.
And this takes time and energy.
I understand. And so what we'll do is we'll take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll tell people how to get on the newsletter list, first of all.
That's great.
And then, we'll talk a little bit more about, muscle hypoxia. We'll summarize our findings about post-workout carbohydrate, and then I have a question for you about oral anabolic steroids, and I know you're the guy who can
sure.
answer this, okay?
No problem.
You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking today with Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You've tried countless products that promise digestive relief, but you still suffer from bloating. Do you avoid foods that give you a distended stomach and abdominal discomfort? Want something that actually works? You need Otrantil. Otrantil is the first in its class to naturally target the root cause of bloating and finally deliver real relief. Developed by a gastroenterologist, Otrantil is the only proven over-the-counter solution for bloating. Learn more at lovemytummy.com. Otrantil is backed by a 100% money-back guarantee. Visit lovemytummy.com today. Use code SHR for 10% off.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high-protein potato chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Ketocana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by
by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Cana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Cana banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today. 4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So, Mauro, bottom line is, if somebody wants to use hypoxia, is there a reasonable way to do it that you're not really putting yourself into harm's way?
Yeah, I think there is. There are various things you can do. Obviously, you know, you could live up in the mountains. That's one way, of course. The other way is to, they have certain apparatuses, for example, that decrease the amount of oxygen. You put it in your mouth, and you can train with that in your mouth, and it decreases the amount of oxygen that gets to your system. And you can dial it in. As a matter of fact, you can make it so it's relatively normal at first, and then, you know, turn the crank a bit more each time as you train more and get more into a hypoxic state without causing any problems at all. There are ways of breath holding, for example, which wouldn't be a major problem if you didn't overdo it. So, in other words, if you're doing a lift, you're doing, say, some curls, you'd want to hold your breath, you know, the old in-out that people preach, you know, when you're contracting, you breathe in or you breathe out, whichever way they teach you, you basically just hold your breath.
Right.
Not to the point where you're going to be a real problem, but you can hold it for a minute or so and do your exercise and see if that helps. So these are relatively safe ways. I mean, if you want to increase your ability to in hypoxic training, you could try the weight walk thing. In other words, grab a set of weights and see how far you can walk with the weight without taking your breath.
But I would absolutely, you know, on any of those where if you're going to be using weight, I would absolutely start out really slow.
Well,
I mean, when you think you can push yourself, oh, I can go a little further, I would stop.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of feel that, and maybe I'm off base about this, but I think that if you're even interested in entertaining this hypoxia effect, that you probably should start out by doing resting breath hold tests where you get a stopwatch or something with a second hand,
exactly,
and you sit in a chair, relaxed, and take a deep breath and hold it for as long as you can until you have to let it out and see how long that goes. And I would experiment with trying to increase your resting breath hold test,
yes,
by doing this more frequently. To kind of get your body ready for this period of lack of oxygen, because The pulmonary response to low oxygen is to put greater demands on the heart to beat faster.
Definitely. Vasodilation occurs. More blood has to go up because
right.
of the decreased oxygen supply. You got to supply more blood to get the oxygen in there. No, I agree completely. And I think if anybody's going to try it, they should try it, like you say, very, very small amounts. And they might even want to try the local hypertrophy response. In other words, put a little bit of a band between your deltoid and your bicep and work your arm. And see how that works.
But don't be too aggressive with it. Don't pull it tight where you're
cutting.
Yeah, you got to be very, very minimal, you know, minimal pressure because once again, and this is why I've always been intrigued with vascular restriction, but I've never experimented with it because I know that it's very easy to cause a trauma, to cause a blood clot of some sort. You have to be very cautious with it.
You have to be very, very cautious, and starting off really slow if you want to, you know, sort of try it out is the way to go. The other thing, of course, is that you don't want to do it in any exercise that could be at all dangerous. You don't want to do it in bench pressing.
Yeah, when you drop the bar on your neck, right?
Exactly. Or you don't want to do it squatting.
Yeah, deadlifting would be good because you can drop the bar
and
fall forward.
Deadlifting is good. Even walking with weights, you just drop the weights, you know. But, you know, again, it's like everything else. In moderation, small amounts, you know, try it out, work it out, see how it works. If it doesn't work for you, then stop it. You know, if it works, then you can maybe go a little further. But either way, you don't jump into it, and really cause problems.
You know, there was a famous Olympic weightlifter that I learned about, and I can't think of his name right now. He had a Slavic name, and one of the things he used to do was they had an outdoor arena that he trained in, and he would do front squats.
Right.
And he would do them to near failure and then rack the bar, turn around, and run 100 yards as fast as he could. He'd sprint.
Right.
And I have to believe that that forces you into a greater degree of anaerobic threshold, and that probably has a hypoxic effect. He was very strong for his size, and a lot of people said it was because of the way he trained, that he did this regularly with his legs.
I agree. The other thing, too, of course, you know, when I trained, when I was training for the powerlifting, I would work out the squats, for example. I'd work the squats heavy, hard, and do some more training. And I'd go back and do the squats again because at that point I had already had the warm-up. I'd already had the groove. You know, I was in the groove for the squat. I'd go heavier. And at these times, because it took longer for me to get up, I would be almost practicing the apneic response for a period of time.
Right.
And I think this helped me at 165 to officially squat 722 pounds.
Right. Oh, that's huge.
Without a suit, just wraps and a belt. I never use a super suit.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, now let's summarize the results of this study real quick, and then I have a question for you, and then we'll plug your newsletter. Post-carbohydrate consumption, post-workout carbohydrate consumption does have an effect on insulin sensitivity up to 24 hours later. End of story.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right. Now, quick question. In the case of oral anabolic steroids, like a drug like Dianabol, is it as taxing to the liver as everybody says it is? You know, you always hear these horror stories about, oh, well, don't use orals because it's going to cause hepatic stress and damage your liver. Is this really true?
Well, we had, in my replacement therapy, people that, this was quite a while ago, I would use, for older people who didn't want the injections, et cetera, I would use methyl testosterone. Now, methyl testosterone, as you know, is a methyl group added to testosterone, so it's more orally available and isn't degraded as much as it goes through the first pass of the liver.
What's a generic or brand name for methyl testosterone? Is it like it's not Dianabol, right? That's oxymethyl.
Pretty close to Dianabol. Dianabol basically is just a variant of methyl testosterone.
Okay.
That's all. I mean, the reason why I'm mentioning methyl testosterone is that it was used therapeutically.
Right. Okay.
And anyways, the methyl testosterone, I did liver function tests on these people. And at certain levels, replacement levels, there didn't seem to be any problems with any people I tested. Now, in a larger group of people, you may find some that are sensitive, and that would be genetically and phylogenetically and phenotypically sensitive to the methyl group as far as the liver, but I didn't find any at that time. And I think it's overplayed.
How many milligrams of methyl testosterone were these people taking a day, would you say?
25.
Well, that's pretty high.
Well, don't forget, methyl testosterone use a higher level of that than you would Dianabol, for example.
Right.
Which would be 5 to 10 milligrams of the Dianabol. So the equivalence is different. I mean, you can't really compare the two because of their different formulations.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
But sure. I mean, sure. It can be hepatotoxic. There's no doubt about that. If you have a propensity to it, if you have a genetic tendency towards it, yeah, you can run into problems. But in general, if you look at anabolic steroid research, of all the millions of people that have used anabolic steroids, there's only, you know, a few handfuls of adverse cases that are severe.
Right.
And you get more adverse cases from antibiotics, from right. aspirin, from
Tylenol. From Tylenol, Adderall. Right. 100 people a year die from Tylenol.
But, you know, you have to understand that, that in medicine, a drug is a drug, okay? It has certain effects, it has certain adverse effects, et cetera. When you take it to the level of the general population and then you play it up in magazines and you know, sensationalize, et cetera, you're going to get an over effect of anything that might happen that might be due to anabolic steroids. And sometimes it wasn't due to the anabolic steroids at all, the adverse effect. It was due to something totally different.
Right.
But because the anabolic steroids is more sensational, they blame it on that.
Right. Right.
So you got to be very careful about any medication, anything at all, including anabolic steroids, as to what the benefits, effects, and adverse effects really are.
Right. Okay, now lastly, let's go ahead and tell people how they can get on the list to receive this amazing newsletter that you put so much effort into.
Well, now the newsletter is free because right. I like to inform people. I don't want to charge them for it. And if they email me and just say, you know, send me the newsletter, we'll put them on the list. I'll send them the first issue, and the next issue should be out within a week if my grandkids allow me. But they can email me at Morrow, M as in Michael, A-U-R-O, at metabolicdiet.com.
Okay. Okay. Morrow at metabolicdiet.com. So
there
you go. I'm sure that we're going to have a follow-up to this show because I have a feeling that our discussion on post-workout carbohydrate, because it really goes against not only the grain of the science that has been out there, as you point out, for endurance athletes, but because so many companies have thrown their hat in the ring to come up with carbohydrate supplements now to be used for post-workout, this is going to continue to be a hot subject, I predict. Morrow, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much, Carl.
Okay.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you again soon, and we'll see everybody tomorrow with another live episode of Superhuman Radio.